The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Bjorkman, Judge Johnson, Judge Larkin, the Honorable Louise Dovery Bjorkman presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The first matter on the case for oral argument today is the matter of Zane Vanshake versus Jacob Letourneau et al. Counsel, as you know, we are proceeding by Zoom today as opposed to an in-person argument, but the rules for oral argument remain unchanged. You will each have 15 minutes to present your argument. Counsel for appellants will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. It's important that you state your name and identify the parties that you represent when you begin your remarks. And I see you're both maintaining your visual contact with us, and that's appropriate. You don't need to turn off your video when you're not addressing the court. We prefer to keep you all in sight. So we want to make this as much like an in-person hearing as we can. So with that, counsel for appellants, you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Leah Tabbert, and I'm an assistant attorney general representing the appellants in this case, the Minnesota State Patrol and State Trooper Jacob Letourneau. This case is about protecting the discretion and authority that state troopers need to enforce the laws on state highways. To do their job, state troopers rely upon the discretion to assume the right of way as an emergency vehicle, that is, to disregard certain traffic laws in certain circumstances. When they employ this discretion, they're protected by official immunity unless their actions are malicious. But the district court's opinion denying summary judgment relies upon an unreasonably narrow interpretation of the scope of emergency vehicle right of way. And that interpretation would severely impede the mission of the state patrol. So appellants ask that this court, respectfully ask this, this court reverse the district court's order. With the time I have today, I'd like to focus on two main areas. First, that Trooper Letourneau did have authority to assume the right of way as an emergency vehicle. And second, that because he acted in good faith, in performance of a discretionary duty, he's entitled to official immunity.
Ms. Tabbert, with respect to the first issue, do you contend, it seems to me that because the patrolling and parking general order specifically accepts from the requirement that an officer follow traffic laws, the response to an emergency call or involvement in a pursuit situation. Given the fact that there is a standalone general order on pursuit, wouldn't we interpret pursuit situation in patrolling and parking along the same lines as it's laid out in the pursuit order?
No, Your Honor. I think that there are two possible ways to interpret the effects of the pursuit policy, the standalone pursuit policy. One of them is the way the district court did, but that interpretation is contrary to common sense, the understanding of the troopers who were deposed, and the practical needs of the state patrol. They really can't perform their jobs unless they have the right to assume the right of way for more run-of-the-mill pursuits, such as traffic stops. So another way to interpret the existence of the pursuit policy, and a more reasonable one, is that the state patrol determined that there's a certain kind of pursuit that's especially dangerous. So if you look at the way pursuit is defined in the pursuit policy, and that's the only place where that definition exists. It's defined in that policy as, you know, basically your action movie car chase. You give someone a signal to pull over and then they choose to flee. Now that happens kind of rarely, but it's particularly dangerous. So the state patrol decided to impose additional requirements and procedures on that kind of pursuit, which is reasonable. But just because they did that doesn't mean that they took away the authority to assume the right of way for more run-of-the-mill pursuits, such as the traffic stop that Trooper Letourneau was trying to complete. And, you know, the fact that this right of way is needed is borne out by, you know, if you think about what Trooper Letourneau's options were at the time that he made the decision to attempt the U-turn. So if he had, as the district court stated he should have, waited for Mr. Vanshake to pass him, then every passing moment, the speeding vehicle would have been getting farther and farther away from him, and he would have had to go quite far above the speed limit to catch up. But if you apply the district court's understanding of emergency vehicle right-of-way, he wouldn't have had the authority to do that. So he had no viable way in which he could pull over the speeder who was engaged in a very serious violation of the law.
Ms. Tabbert, the pursuit policy defines the term motor vehicle pursuit in part 2A. I think you're familiar with that, right? You're oriented to that. And then there's two paragraphs. The first one, I think, says what a motor vehicle pursuit is. And then the second paragraph says what it is not, right? So is it your view that the trooper here was operating under the, or his actions at the time of the accident fall within that second paragraph?
I would characterize, I don't think there's any dispute, Your Honor, that Trooper Letourneau was not engaged in a motor vehicle pursuit as defined in Section 2A of this policy. So there wasn't an opportunity for the motorist to flee. And that means that he wasn't bound by the additional requirements of that pursuit policy, but he was still, in attempting a traffic stop, he was still in the immediate pursuit of an actual or suspected violator of the law, which is the language used in the statute and also echoed in State Patrol policy.
So I think your answer would be yes. It was within paragraph two, which begins by talking about routine traffic stops or other instances in which blah, 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 dot, 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 right?
Yeah, it's more like a routine traffic stop than a motor vehicle pursuit within the context of this definition. But I would also say that, you know, it was not a usual traffic stop in that the speeding violation was particularly egregious. So in addition to being, you know, in the immediate pursuit of a violator of the law, Trooper Letourneau also has authority to assume the right of way in the context of an emergency. And in this case, he saw someone traveling more than 50% higher than the speed limit during commuting hours, which he perceived to be a significant risk to the public. So in the context of that emergent risk.
Well, and counsel, I don't think there's any dispute. I think that respondent agrees that the challenged conduct here is not the decision to pursue, it's how it was performed and specifically how the U-turn was performed. And, you know, and when we analyze that as the specific conduct, isn't Letourneau's prior reprimand for making a U-turn in an unsafe way? I mean, doesn't that suggest that his failure here involved a ministerial duty, that he didn't have an option to make a decision to perform a U-turn as he did here?
No, Your Honor. First, I want to clarify that Trooper Letourneau had no existing reprimands at the time that he made this decision. He was involved in a previous car accident that was determined to be preventable, but the definition of preventable in State Patrol policy is quite broad. It's basically, you didn't do everything you could possibly have done to avoid the crash. So he was involved in a prior accident and did not receive a reprimand from that.
What was he told in the investigation of that prior accident about how he should have responded to that prior situation?
I don't believe that there's information in the record about that. There was a determination, like I said, that it was a preventable crash. And he would imagine was told to be aware of his surroundings and make, you know, careful decisions about whether U-turns are safe to perform. But that's exactly what he did in this case. And though he made the wrong decision, it's still a discretionary decision that's entitled to official immunity. Further, I would—
There's nothing in the record then, counsel, that would suggest he was told specific ways he should exercise his duties in the future because of that prior accident, other than to be more careful.
I don't think that there's anything in the record on that, Your Honor. And that kind of plays into the fact that, you know, state troopers have to drive for 90% of their work time. So they're constantly being asked to make these difficult driving decisions, especially because, you know, they're not just getting from point A to point B. They have to put themselves in a position to signal drivers to pull over when they want to enforce traffic laws. So I think it's notable that all of the troopers who were deposed testified that they use U-turns, especially on roads like 247, to turn around quickly, and that Trooper Letourneau himself had done the exact same maneuver earlier that day without incident. So the mere existence of a previous issue with a U-turn doesn't mean that it's an inherently unsafe maneuver. It, as always, depends on the circumstances. Now, on the topic of official immunity, I want to talk briefly about the alleged ministerial duties that Trooper Letourneau was under. So the ability to assume the right of way as an emergency vehicle means that he wasn't bound by any traffic laws. He was engaged in a discretionary duty and had the discretionary decision to initiate the traffic stop. And the plaintiff relies upon a number of different State Patrol policies to say that he violated some other ministerial duty, but all of those clearly required judgment and professional evaluation of the circumstances. So they too impose discretionary duties. And that's laid out in more detail in the reply with case law supporting those responses. But I also want to talk about, you know, the specific traffic laws that the district court relied upon. If the court agrees that Trooper Letourneau didn't have the right of way and did have to comply with all traffic laws, the particular traffic laws that the district court relied upon actually imposed discretionary duties themselves, because they are all about what is safe in a particular situation, what is dangerous in a particular situation, and they require judgment comparing the factors at play to determine whether a particular action is warranted. That's that can be contrasted with laws that impose a specific duty the same way every time, such as the law in Briggs, which was that when an idling vehicle is unoccupied, it needs to be locked. That's a ministerial duty because it's clearly if A, then B. But the traffic laws at issue here require much more judgment and resemble the state patrol policies that have been determined in the past to be discretionary.
Ms. Tabbert, let's assume we agree with you that this is a situation that presents discretionary duties. What then do we do with the issue of malice, given the fact that the district court didn't go there because it concluded that the duties were ministerial and violated, and so immunity would not attach? What do we do with an issue that the district court didn't decide?
Well, this issue, despite the district court not reaching it, was fully briefed below and fully argued below. Actually, a significant portion of the motion hearing was about the issue of malice. So the court has all the information before it that it needs to reach this issue, and that's supported by the case cited in the briefs in Re AD. When there's no prejudice to either party in addressing something that hasn't been addressed below, it can be addressed. So if the court reaches the malice issue, which I think it should, there can be no genuine dispute that Trooper Letourneau acted without malice. The most important fact here is that there's no dispute that he didn't intend to cause harm. And the test for malice is the intentional doing of a wrongful act. So that pretty much is an open and shut case as to whether or not Trooper Letourneau acted with malice. The plaintiff tries to rely
Is that really true? I mean, can't you conduct an intentional act even if you didn't intend to cause a particular harm? I thought the test that we as applied to official immunity was whether someone has intentionally committed an act that the officer has reason to believe is legally prohibited. I mean, that's different than an intent to harm, isn't it?
Sure, Your Honor. Yeah, and that's discussed also in the briefing as another way of evaluating malice. But under that test, also Trooper Letourneau did not act with malice because he had reason to believe that he had sufficient time to make this U-turn safely based on his training and professional judgment. He observed Mr. Vanshake was slowing down significantly and that the front of his car was dipping, which gave him reason to believe that he was stopping to allow him to perform the U-turn. So he didn't believe he was about to do something wrongful or prohibited. He believed he was about to do something that he'd done probably hundreds of times before, make a U-turn in order to pursue a speeding driver. And I would remind the court that under the Keon case, the threshold for malice is set very high. It's set high in recognition that police officers have a difficult job to do. And in order to do it, they need to have the freedom to make decisions based on their training and their professional judgment rather than a fear of litigation risk or personal liability. That's what official immunity exists to do. The purpose is to prevent decision paralysis for jobs like Trooper Letourneau's job, where every day requires a series of discretionary decisions with incomplete information, with little time to deliberate. In this case, if Trooper Letourneau had waited, he would have been in a position to perhaps have to go close to 100 miles per hour in order to catch up to this speeder, which itself poses a risk. All of the viable options for Trooper Letourneau were inherently risky. And so official immunity exists to give state officials the room to make those decisions that involve a lot of risk based on the proper considerations of their training and professional judgment rather than fear of litigation.
Ms. Tabbert, I'd like to just make sure I understand your argument about pursuit. So there is, Judge Bjorkman pointed out that the policy or general order about patrolling and parking, which makes a reference to a pursuit situation and also while in pursuit of a motor vehicle. We've got the policy called pursuit, which defines motor vehicle pursuit. We've also got the statute 169.03.5 and a policy or general order that tracks that about in immediate pursuit of an actual or suspected violator of the law. So, and I think it's your position that the type of pursuit described in the statute and the general order that tracks the statute is different from the motor vehicle pursuit that's defined in the pursuit policy. Am I correct about that so far?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Two different types of pursuit. Are there any additional types, or does it just break down into those two? Is it just a dichotomy between motor vehicle pursuit and immediate pursuit in the statute, or is there a third or additional category?
I would characterize it more as, like, you know, if you think of it as a Venn diagram, motor vehicle pursuit is a small circle within the larger circle of pursuit situations. So any traffic stop would be the immediate pursuit of an actual or suspected violator of the law, because that violation or suspicion of violation is necessary to have the authority to make a traffic stop. So again, it's a small subset of the greater area of pursuits.
That makes some sense to me, because the policy, if I can find it on my own screen here, the pursuit policy, in definition A1, it's about a person who has been given a signal to stop and they fail to obey that stop. But presumably, maybe in most cases, the order to stop would be because they violated the law, I suppose. I'm perhaps thinking out loud. So the pursuit policy would apply to someone who has both violated the law and failed to obey an order to stop. And the immediate pursuit described by the statute and the corresponding policy would perhaps describe a pursuit of somebody who simply has violated the law, but not violated an order to stop. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired. You will have time for rebuttal. Mr. Lampman, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, thank you guys for hearing this today. Again, my name is Jeremy Lampman, and I'm presenting today on behalf of respondent Zane Van Schaik. First off, just kind of a couple of general things. Official immunity is not an absolute immunity. It is, or for the actions of public employees in the performance of their official duties. And not all police conduct, even in emergency situations, if there is one here, is afforded immunity, even if some discretion by the police is being used in that situation. The Thompson case, I think, is the most on point here. And the Thompson case specifically says in there that when a government policy outlines detailed requirements for their officers to perform their duties, the failure to conform to that policy can be held as a ministerial failure for which immunity does not apply, even though many other aspects of the situation may involve the exercise of discretion. And I think that's a...
I'm glad, counsel, that you presented the Thompson case, because here's my question overall to you. I mean, Thompson had a duty which was ministerial, because it said when you're in pursuit, you need to put on your emergency lights and use your siren. I mean, those are, you know, like the you can't leave your car running unlocked in the other case. The court found that these were ministerial duties. I'm struggling in our case to find duties that were allegedly violated that are so absolute and certain as the requirement that you put your lights and siren are on were in Thompson. Can you help me with that?
Yeah, understandably. And I think that goes back to kind of what the two or three that we've looked at already in the general policies or the general orders. So general order 12-2-011, which is the patrolling and parking under C1, specifically states that members have to obey all traffic laws and shall not assume any special privileges except for responding to an emergency in a pursuit situation. Again, we've talked about, you guys previously talked a little bit about the difference between the pursuit situation and whether or not the definition under General Order 1020-012 applies here, where you have the fleeing situation versus a routine traffic stop, and whether or not that those are both considered pursuits, and if that's different from the policy where they talk about immediate pursuit. And I would argue that there is no difference there. Pursuit is only defined in what we have in the record here and everything that we've seen in one specific place, and it's so specifically defined that the whole general order is about nothing more than the pursuit, and it's the only place that it's defined when it talks about the fact that the only time that you can claim a pursuit in order to go around the traffic laws or disobey the traffic laws or disregard them, excuse me, is when you are in pursuit of somebody that is fleeing from you.
In other words, the situation where there had been a prior command to stop and the motorist did not obey it.
Correct. And in this situation,
I understand we don't have that situation here, but I'm kind of left wondering, does that mean if I'm a trooper minding my own business, driving 55 in a 55 zone, and somebody passes me going 100 miles an hour, I can't speed up to execute a stop? That doesn't make sense to me.
No, and I do think that there's more practical application to it. And we specifically talked about that in our brief, and we bring in that discussion along with the troopers who have to look at the evaluation of these claims every day when they're doing their job. But again, the separate part of this is that there's multiple different areas here that talk about in these general policies what their duties are. And they are more specific when the fact that when you look at the vehicle emergency vehicle operation, so assuming under the second theory that the trooper has the ability to disregard traffic laws while pursuing just an average person they see violating the law, they still have a duty to drive the vehicle for the due regard for the safety of other people on the highway, and they have an ongoing duty the entire time to not drive their vehicle in a careless or a reckless manner. In order to define careless or reckless, you look at the statute that defines careless or reckless, and in this situation, that's what the district court did. They looked at Minnesota statute, it's 169.13 subdivision 2. And in there, they talk about whether or not, or what is careless driving. And it's a simple discretion or a simple decision of doing something that causes harm or creates a risk of harm or immediate harm to someone else on the roadway. And that's exactly what happened here.
But doesn't what you said suggests to me an exercise of discretion to find out what under particular circumstances would have been the safe way in this case to execute a U-turn.
I'm not disagreeing with you that what happened here may involve some discretionary decisions. And we argue that in our brief too, or highlight that in our brief. A decision can include both a ministerial aspect to it because of a duty that's imposed on you by a policy that's put in place by your employer, in this case, the state patrol, and it can also involve discretionary duties. But what they look at is when they're looking at these discretionary decisions is whether or not that there's something that actually impact what is going on here. It's not just a basic routine decision, which is what we have here. This isn't a situation where the decision to go through a red light at high speed while responding to a immediate harm claim, an emergency response call, is different than what we have here, which is responding to a violation that he just witnessed. It's a speeding violation on a rural highway. There's no other traffic going in his direction that he had witnessed, which is on the video showing that there's no immediate harm to anyone around him. This is a rural highway out in the middle of nowhere. And the way that he goes about doing it is also, while I understand that they have a job to do in pursuing violators of the law, they also have a duty to drive like everybody else does on the roadway with a reasonable care for those around us. When you look in our brief, the timeline breakdown, I think, is the biggest and most important thing that's in there. We have in this situation something that you don't normally have, and that's a full video of what happened in this instance because the vehicle recorder was turned on prior to the initiation of the stop and the lights coming on, which is normally what happens. And when you look through that, it's like 4 or 5 seconds from beginning to end, when he pulls off to the roadway, after he initiates his lights without ever stopping and turning, is like 3 seconds before the impact occurs. He just simply didn't allow any time frame for the people around him to react. His testimony that is more specific to the vehicle behind him says that he looked in his side mirror while also transitioning off the roadway and turning on his lights, so doing multiple things at the same time, stated that he looked in his side mirror for a fraction of a second and assumed that the vehicle behind him was slowing down before making his U-turn.
He clearly misjudged the situation. I mean, I don't think there's anybody that disagrees with that. That would seem to be undisputed, that he thought he observed your client's car slowing down and it wasn't, and the accident occurred. But how does that get us, again, to an absolute fixed ministerial duty? Unlike Thompson, we don't have a prohibition on making a U-turn in the middle of, you know, in the middle of the road as opposed to at an intersection or something.
Right. I didn't mean to cut you off there, Your Honor. I think that all goes back to the Minnesota State Patrol policies that they have an ultimate duty to drive, or shall not drive is what the actual statute says, shall not drive in a careless or reckless manner. And in order to define careless or reckless, you look at the statute from Minnesota on what careless or reckless driving is. And violating that statute is a clear violation of the ministerial duty to not drive that way. And in this situation, his actions are not justified. And the types of decisions that he's making there are so minuscule on whether or not to make a U-turn or wait 3 seconds for a car to drive by before making a U-turn when it's safe, and instead making the assumption, is not the type that's meant to be immune from prosecution. We've seen other cases that are similar to this where, although some decision does, or some decision may involve discretion, it needs to be something that's a higher level. We've seen cases before, and I don't have the specific citations, but can always get them, that, you know, if a officer is using his computer in the vehicle while driving and ends up causing an accident, that's not something that is allowed under Minnesota law for you to be using a electronic device like that while driving. And something like that would not accept them from immunity. Or driving through a stop sign because they were distracted in some other way is the same that any other motorist is held to the same standard. In this situation, I don't think that a ruling that immunity doesn't apply here in this specific situation would put any hindrance or any issues on the State Patrol doing their duties going forward. And I do also want to address the malice argument, since that—
Before you do that, Mr. Lampman, is it your position that the trooper violated a ministerial duty because he violated one of the provisions in the pursuit general order? And I'm referring to 10-20-012.
So our argument includes that he violated multiple ministerial duties, which are outlined in our brief. We argue that he did violate the pursuit policy under 10-20-012 under that 2A definition under 1 and 2, that this was a routine traffic stop. And under that policy, he is not afforded the emergency vehicle status that allows him to disregard traffic laws.
Okay, so it's not, and just to be clear, so it's not that the policy applies and there is some one of the subsequent provisions in the six-page policy was something he didn't follow, but you're saying because this situation didn't fall within the paragraph A1 of the definition, he can't do any pursuit. Is that your position?
Well, so the pursuit is used in order to, as a definition, in order to further clarify the statute that, or the general policy listed in 12-2-001, which specifically states that members shall obey all traffic laws and shall not assume any special privileges except while responding to an emergency call or involved in a pursuit action. So those two kind of go hand in hand in the sense that one is defining the actual wordage or verbiage in the general order 1220-001. So our argument is that he did not have the ability to assume the special driving privileges because he was not involved in a pursuit under 10-20-012. He also violated, like I say, additional—
I'm sorry, Mr. Lamman, this is, and I apologize, but I just want you to slow down. So he did, his pursuit was not authorized by the pursuit policy, which -012. The policy that you mentioned about immediate pursuit of an actual or suspected violator of the law, does that policy authorize a pursuit of your client's vehicle? Your client, the other vehicle, the speeding vehicle.
That one is the one that was cited by counsel for the appellant. And that I think would apply. But again, that also states in there that, again, it's only in relation to an emergency call, which we don't have here. And it comes down to the interpretation of the immediate pursuit of an actual or suspected violator of the law.
Right. And so the speeding vehicle was at least believed to be a violator of the law, right?
Correct.
And so, and the trooper did a U-turn so that he could pursue him, right?
Correct.
So isn't his conduct authorized by that policy, or at least doesn't that policy apply to his conduct?
I do believe that that a policy applies, but it also needs to then, but then it also pulls in the ability under the emergency vehicle operation, if he is considered an emergency vehicle under that policy that absolves him from following certain traffic laws, it then pulls in the general order 0820-033, which is specifically titled the emergency vehicle operation. And under that general order with the state patrol, and that's the exhibit one to Trooper Letourneau's deposition, states in there that this policy does not relieve any authorized emergency vehicle from the duty to drive with due regard for safety of the persons using the highway, which is the exact definition that's used in the careless driving statute. So it's when you compare those, even if he is in an emergency vehicle and that previous statute or that previous general order applies to give him that authority, he still has a duty to drive with due care. These policies do not, one doesn't cancel out the other. You know, he still always has a duty to drive with due care. He always has a duty to not drive in a careless or reckless manner.
Mr. Lampman, your time is shortly expiring, and I want to ask a couple of questions about malice. Assuming, for the sake of argument, that we determine that Trooper Letourneau was engaged in discretionary duties, what evidence would support a finding that his U-turn maneuver, Trooper Letourneau knew that his U-turn maneuver was legally prohibited?
So not only do the state troopers go through extensive training, and they go through it on a yearly basis on how to properly initiate a traffic stop, something that we go through at length in the deposition with all three troopers that were deposed. In this situation, he has the very unique situation of having been involved in the very same accident, and I believe it was within 1 year of this incident happening, or right around that time frame, where he sees a speeder coming, he pulls off to the side of a highway, and he immediately initiates a U-turn without verifying that traffic behind him did indeed yield to him and caused an accident of the same preventable nature. So our argument here is simply that malice is not just the intentional act as you described earlier. It can also be doing something that they know is prohibited and doing it anyways. And that's the exact situation here with that prior instance of the prior exact same accident happening.
Thank you, counsel. I was muted again. Judge Johnson, do you have another question?
No, I was going to tell you that you're muted, okay. That's all.
Ms. Tabbert, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to start off by saying, on the topic of malice, the previous crash that occurred was in fact in 2014. So it was several years prior, and Trooper Letourneau has, you know, a number of years of state service in the state patrol without any incidents. The crash in 2014 did not result in any discipline. And so it could not be reasonably inferred that he was like put on notice that he's got, you know, a bad habit of making bad U-turns. He simply misjudged it in this particular situation in good faith. And on the topic,
Ms. Tabbert, you've used the word inference. And I guess I'm struggling here a bit with the question of, if we agree that these were discretionary acts, and so the question of malice arises, is that really a decision that a court can make, or rather, shouldn't the inferences from the evidence be weighed by a jury to decide whether Trooper Letourneau acted with malice?
Well, first I would say that immunities exist to protect entities from litigation, not just from liability. So to the extent that determining an immunity has to be done at the very end of a case by a jury, it's not really providing any protection. And I would further say that given the testimony we have from the troopers and from Trooper Letourneau, no reasonable jury could conclude that he acted with malice or that he had reason to believe he was performing a prohibited act. As I've stated before, this U-turn maneuver is used frequently by state troopers, and he had done the exact same thing earlier that day without incident. So there's simply there could be no genuine dispute of fact. There's no record evidence that could raise a dispute that he acted with malice. I also want to clarify that it's in fact undisputed that Mr. Van Schaik did apply his brakes when he saw Trooper Letourneau, you know, pulling over and turning on his lights. So it's not the case that Trooper Letourneau, you know, misperceived that Mr. Van Schaik was braking. He did see him brake. He saw the front of his car dipping down, which indicates quickly losing speed. He just misjudged how much time he had to perform the U-turn, and that was the problem here. And also, in response to what Respondents' Counsel said about how much of a risk of harm a particular speeding violation might pose on a rural highway, I would say that the court ought to defer to the judgment of the state troopers who testified. All three of them testified that someone going almost 30 miles per hour over the speed limit is a severe speeding violation, an egregious speeding violation, and one that does pose a substantial risk to public safety. And I would ask, if that's not a speeding violation that a state trooper should enforce, I don't know what would be. And then finally, Respondents' Counsel talked about, you know, the additional duties that Trooper Letourneau is still bound by. And there are a number of duties in the state patrol policies, providing guidance for state trooper behavior, but the ones that Mr. Lantman relies upon are in fact discretionary. So specifically, he talked about the duty to drive with due care, which has been determined in law to be a discretionary duty. I believe in the case of Keon v. City of Minnetonka, which is an unpublished Court of Appeals opinion, they evaluated exactly that language and determined that it imposed a discretionary duty. And the same is true that it's a discretionary duty, all of the other policies that the respondent relies upon here. It's not unusual or strange that so many of the policies governing state troopers' behavior are discretionary. It's simply reflective of the fact that as a part of their work, they have to make professional judgments on a regular basis. They have to apply their training and make decisions based on, you know, constantly changing circumstances, because when you're traveling down a state highway, the circumstances around you are constantly changing. And the idea of trying to perform traffic law enforcement in that context requires a significant room for the exercise of discretion. So unless your honors have any further questions, I would just ask that because he was engaged in good faith effort to enforce the traffic laws and was performing a discretionary duty, the court find that Trooper Letourneau was entitled to official immunity, the state patrol entitled to vicarious official immunity, and reverse the district court's order.
I have one question concerning when we're analyzing the duties that arise, do we give any kind of a different analysis or different treatment to the statutes that set forth duties as opposed to the state patrol policies or general orders? And I'm thinking about 169.03 sub 5. Because that's a statute, does it have any special status vis-a-vis state patrol policies?
I think that particular statute does carry significant weight because it preceded all of the state patrol policies governing the same issue. It was first passed, I believe, in 1945. And so I think that should be good reason to give it additional weight here in determining the scope of emergency vehicle right of way.
And one more question, if Judge Bjorkman will permit, and that is, so we have case law, I think, about sub 2 of that statute, about stops and approaching a red or stop signal, slow down. I mean, I think the Thompson case focused on sub 2, if I'm correct. Were there other cases as well that have interpreted any of the subdivisions in that statute off the top of your head?
The Frank, the Commissioner of Public Safety case, interpreted... I believe it was referring to this statute, the fact that an emergency vehicle can assume the right of way in response to an emergency call. So it found that the police officer had observed a traffic violation that posed a risk to the public, and that was sufficiently an emergency for him to assume the right of way.
And which subdivision is that?
I believe it would also be subdivision 5. And I might be interpreting a policy, but I believe that it's interpreting the statute. Okay. I can provide the citation.
If it's in your brief, we'll find it. We'll probably find it. We can find it in any event. So thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both of you. The case was well presented this morning. We appreciate your helpful arguments. We'll take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period.
Your Honor, if I may, I don't intend to make any additional argument. I just noted an inaccuracy in the actual facts on.
Counsel, you don't get under our rules any opportunity, but please rest assured that we are familiar with the record and we will double check with all of the briefing. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.